a time to reflect on how South Sudan got its independence and remember the struggle that went through to gaining that independence, but also to reflect on the fact that there's still a lot of work to be done and that we're not in the place that we, I think people were anticipating 9 years ago. I think people wanted to think that there would be peace and there would be prosperity and it would be moving forward, and we've had a lot of struggles since that time. I think today is a time to take stock of where we are and where South Sudan is and look forward to the future and how we can make it a better future.
Yes, and despite the challenges the country is going through, there is always a reason to celebrate. What can the country's people celebrate on this anniversary?
Well, I think that first of all, I think they can celebrate the fact that they remember those people who perhaps lost their lives or sacrificed so much in order to make South Sudan an independent country. And I think that's the first thing to do, is to look back and remember that. I think the other thing they can be pleased about is that if you think back to this day, 9 July last year, we were still in the pre-transitional government. We were uncertain whether Dr. Riek Machar, for example, would be in the government going forward. Everything was very much in the air. And we've had some progress there. We've got a transitional government. There's 5 vice presidents as per the peace agreement. There's ministers have been appointed. As of a couple of weeks ago, we've now got governors largely appointed to the various regions. So there's some progress to be celebrated. Unfortunately, there's also a huge increase in subnational violence, between different groups and parties on the ground, and that needs to be addressed very quickly. But I think there's some things that are definitely worth celebrating today, Sonny. Absolutely.
Looking ahead, there is still a lot to be done. What must the leaders do to ensure that South Sudan enjoys an everlasting peace?
Well, I think two or three things. I mean, I think the first thing is in the short term is to making sure that these governors are on the ground, the county commissioners are appointed, the PIAM leaders are appointed, and that we get on top of the intercommunal violence, which is creating so many problems, and we are, as the UN, supporting those efforts, both with our negotiators, but also our soldiers and our peacekeepers on the ground. But then in addition to that, I think two things we need to happen. First of all, the government, the national government, needs to function as a unified government. That's a government of national unity, and that's what it is. But it needs to function that way, so that we've got 5 vice presidents and a president, and that the president and then the 5 vice presidents should be making many of these decisions that need to be made collectively, so that that there's an ownership of decision making that goes right across all the parties, and that the transitional government functions exactly as I said, as a unity government. The second thing is that we should be looking forward, because in 3 years' time, or less than 3 years' time now, we will be having an election, and we need to be thinking about the elections and the ability of people to be able to select their government and their leaders according to an electoral process and democracy. And we've been doing a lot of work trying to get the problems that are right in front of us solved, but we also need to look beyond that and 3 years down the track and see how we organize, how South Sudan organizes in order to be able to hit that deadline.
How is the United Nations supporting the current peace process in the country?
I have to say we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes. Unfortunately, COVID-19 has meant that there's been not so much public work going on, but we're working on the areas of supporting the transitional security arrangements. We're talking at the moment about the constitutional process and how that's going to go forward. I know the Secretary General has written to President Kiir. He's also been in contact with some of the regional leaders to have them once again focus their attention on South Sudan and continue to keep the peace process moving forward. We've had a lot of discussions, and I've had personally had a lot of discussions recently about moving the peace process forward and addressing the issues that are confronting South Sudan as we speak. So we haven't gone to sleep or anything like that. It's just a little bit below the radar because of coronavirus, but the work still goes on, and it's very, very important to keep the momentum of the peace agreement moving in the right direction, to keep things moving forward so people can be positive about the peace agreement developing and unfolding and getting to that election. Well, there's been a lot of work done right across, certainly from the World Health Organization. WHO has been doing an enormous amount of work, UNICEF as well. UNMISS has renovated or either wards in hospitals or separate facilities in the 10 states across South Sudan so that there's a place for people who need treatment from COVID-19 to go to. And so we've put on roofs, windows, electricity, water, beds and equipment to make sure that these centres are up and running and functioning. And then either the Ministry of Health personnel or NGO personnel will be staffing these facilities. One of the reasons we're trying to do that is so that people have who have got maybe COVID, who need to be treated, can go have a place to go to, so they don't go to the health clinics and the other hospitals and possibly infect health facilities across South Sudan. Because there are a lot of good work being done by agencies right across South Sudan, treating malaria, typhoid, diarrhea, helping with women giving birth. And what we don't want to do is to have COVID in those places and those places get closed down, because if they get closed down, many more people could die from completely preventable issues that are not COVID-related. And many of those people might be young children or young people and women perhaps who are giving birth. So we've got to protect the health system. And this is one of the reasons we're doing that.
You talked earlier on about the issue of intercommunal violence across the country, and this surge in the intercommunal violence has caused a lot of loss of life and displacement in several parts of the country. How can this be reversed?
I think there needs to be a strategy that has two parts. One is to become involved with the leadership of the those that are fighting right now, and have an agreement for them to pull back and develop a buffer zone or a zone between them, so that they don't continue to fight. And I'm thinking at the moment of the Jonglei area, having a buffer zone between the Dinka and the Mule and the Mule and the Nua in particular, so that that can be patrolled. And then I think the second part of that is to making a longer, medium, long-term strategy, which is about providing facilities and development opportunities for many of those people, so that young boys don't pick up a gun and think the only opportunity for them to get ahead is to go and loot somebody else's cattle, but they are able to go to school and perhaps be able to be involved in other activities. We have to ask and give people the opportunity to look beyond where they are now to something better. And at the moment, they don't have that, and so we're seeing people resorting to violence rather than resorting to peace.